Arthur Griffin, Mecklenburg County Commission at Large candidate. He is in the studio.
Good morning to you, BJ. Glad to be here with you.
Always a pleasure to see you. You haven't aged any.
Oh, man, what are you doing?
You walk, you're exercising.
Trust me. I had a little bit more hair than this a couple of years ago.
You're a legend in this community. And tell us about your resume.
Well, I grew up here. I'm a Charlotte native, born in Good Samaritan Hospital, went to Second Ward High School, which is an all-black high school here in Charlotte. I left Charlotte to go to the military, came back, got a little job at Legal Aid Society, worked there for about 20 years, representing low-income folk with respect to housing, public benefits, some contractual work. Got involved with education sort of by accident. Our law firm represented some high school students that had been suspended from school because school desegregation was a big deal back in the early 70s. The case was Givens versus Poe, and it's all about due process. And what they meant was that a lot of students were told, just go home. And so the Constitution says you got to at least hear the issues as to why you want that student to go home.
Right.
And those issues have to be just issues and then ruled upon. But at the time, the system was just telling kids to go home. And we filed a lawsuit and federal courts agreed. And even to this day, that case is still a valid case. It's case law for the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. And it's Givens versus Poe that gives due process rights for students as relates to suspensions and exclusions in the public schools. But while doing that type of work, BJ, I got interested in talking to the students and their families. And one of the things that really stood out was that some of the students couldn't read and they were graduating.
Mm.
And I just couldn't understand how could you get to 12th grade and you were functionally illiterate.
Right.
And so I got more and more involved with education issues. Around 1975, I stayed involved with issues, trying to figure out more and more how our baby is slipping through the cracks. And about a decade later, I had promised never to be a politician, never to be an elected official. About a decade later, in 1985, I actually got on the school board as an appointed position at that time. At that point in 1985, school desegregation was still a hot topic here in Mecklenburg County. I ran for school board in 86. I lost that race in 86, but I turned right around in 88, and I won that election and every election after that on the school board and had a wonderful tenure. I eventually rose from the end of the dais all the way up to becoming chairman of the school board in 1997, and I stayed there for 5 years as chairman, and when I left the board, we went to New York to get a job. But a lot happened from 75 to 85, BJ.
Yeah.
I served on the board of directors of the Area Fund. I was involved with Head Start Policy Council. I served on the Urban League of the Carolinas board. I was a member of the Mecklenburg County Board of Social Services. I was on the executive council of the Boy Scouts Council here in Mecklenburg County.
Get it all.
I was a court-appointed guardian ad litem, working with kids who were either abused or neglected. I've worked with almost every human service organization you could imagine. The first Children's Law Center, I was on that board of directors. We now call it the Council for Children's Law here in Mecklenburg County.
Okay.
I mean, there's just a number of organizations and activities I participated in over the years and enjoyed every minute of it. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, you name it. If it dealt with human services, dealt with moving people from upward mobility, trying to help them improve the quality of life and opportunities, I was there. I was the first speaker with John Crawford when he was creating his scholarship program with the Housing Authority.
Okay.
Years and years ago. Now it's a full-fledged foundation providing services to youngsters. We work to keep kids, particularly African-American students, out of jail, trying to reduce incarceration time in the projects. I grew up in a three-room house in First Ward.
Okay.
Urban Renewal came through First Ward. You hear a lot of Urban Renewal going through Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But they also came through First Ward, tore my house down, moved me to Fairview Homes, a public housing project off of Oakland Avenue.
Yep.
It's been a a wonderful community. I've enjoyed it. There have been enormous challenges growing up here in Charlotte. Charlotte's a great place, but we could be a lot better.
You know about the study, the upward mobility study. That has to bother you, that we're still in that position after they came out with the study.
Two things. We knew that there were two Charlottes, mm-hmm. one have and one have nots. So when the study was released in about 2013, BJ, I reflected on another study from 1999. You may recall there was a study about race relations. Mm-hmm. They said Charlotte ranked near the top in philanthropy, but almost on the bottom in terms of racial trust.
Well, that was the time when we were supposed to go out and eat ice cream. Remember that?
That was Joe Martin. Remember, take somebody to lunch. That was Joe Martin. Joe Martin and I served on the school board the same. That was in 1992, something during that time frame.
Right.
But what I'm saying to you is about every decade or so, a study will come out and basically say the same thing. And when this study came out, it was troubling to me. Simply because we can do better.
Yeah.
This is an economic hub. This is a premier urban economic center.
Absolutely.
It's called Charlotte, North Carolina. And because of our philanthropy, our willing to give, we just need to figure out how to shape that in such a way that it's much more effective.
Yeah.
That we have, in fact, the kind of leadership that has experiences. Mm-hmm. I mean, my experiences go back to carrying my commodities food from the welfare office over on 4th Street right behind the federal courthouse and walking back down to my home with the brown boxes of commodity foods. They gave you a big block of cheese. They gave you big cans of powdered eggs.
Yeah.
I mean, those things, a big 10-pound bag of navy beans. And right. for us, we used to take a little straw and the kids in the neighborhood and shoot peas at each other with them. But you had to have that kind of background to understand what upward mobility really means mm-hmm. and how to shape and create a framework for that to actually happen. So it's not just words, but actually it's action to move from where you are, if you are receiving public benefits, to having an opportunity to take advantage of the wonderful things, economic things that are here in this community.
How much is the budget on a yearly basis for the county?
The county's budget is about $2 billion, and so is the city. And I think the school board's last budget was a little over $2 billion. So that's $2 billion each year. And the county's budget, I'm not sure what the makeup is for the city, but 75 cents of every dollar that we spend from the county comes from people like you and me. It comes from the taxpayer, property tax. Wow. And that's one of the things that people should understand. Mecklenburg County has three principal functions. One is to set the tax rate, the property tax rate in this community. The second is to pass a budget. And the third is to respond to the community's priorities. They also have a different hat, too. This occurred about a decade ago. But the county also sits as a consolidated human services board. Now, what I mean by that, back in the old days, there used to be a health commission. Back in the old days, used to be a board of social services. In fact, I used to serve on the board of social services. But today, the county commission, in addition to its regular work, is also responsible for the community's public health. That's 1.12 million citizens that the county is responsible for as it relates to public health. Mm-hmm. When COVID occurred, Mecklenburg County front and center mm-hmm. in terms of trying to make sure that this community was protected. They're also responsible for social services. And social services are those traditional programs called Work First now. It used to be called Temporary Aid to Needy Families, Welfare, but it's called Work First today. They're also responsible for food stamps. They're also responsible for Medicaid. They're responsible for foster care, child neglect and abuse. All that comes under social services. So they really wear two hats. They wear the traditional hat of a Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission, and then they wear the other hat of a consolidated human services board that's responsible for public health and social services. And it's really important. I mean, COVID, I just mentioned that, right? Mm-hmm. They're also responsible for making sure that we address things like HIV, of which African Americans, unfortunately, sort of leads the pack in terms of social determinants of having HIV. The highest percentage of a race or ethnic group is African-American, but also premature deaths. Mecklenburg County has a high number of premature deaths. What is premature death? Premature death is if you die before age 65. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about, you know, who's in the jail. We've talked about who's on welfare. Do you realize who leads the pack for premature deaths?
We do.
Folk that look like you and me.
Right.
And it's from chronic illnesses like diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and cancer. Those four pieces right there. So one of the hats that we wear as a county commissioner would be on public health. And certainly we need to target with laser precision. We can target communities or census tracts. What I mean by that, we know right now, because you go to the doctors, we know who has cancer, we know who has diabetes, we know who has heart disease, we know who's had strokes, because if nothing else, they're receiving Medicaid.
We got a serious homeless problem right now. Everybody's walking around with backpacks and everything they own in their hands, walking down Graham Street, North Tryon Street. It's going to get worse.
That's another data point. And I have to give credit to the Board of County Commissioners. At least they have one of their six priorities is to reduce racial disparities across every program and everything that they do. So at least they've said, from a policy perspective, let's reduce those racial and ethnic disparities across programs. But you mentioned in terms of the homeless, who do you think from an ethnic and racial perspective is homeless in Mecklenburg County? It's people that look like you and me. And we have to create a sort of a framework. And I think that's what's missing. As I said to you earlier about my background, because I've had experiences in human services, I've had experiences in law. My last full-time job for the last about 12 years, I was a senior vice president at McGraw-Hill Education in New York City. And so I've had the experience of not only the human services piece, I've had the legal experience, I've had the corporate America experience. I think I understand how to create a framework to manage some of the various interventions and programs we have so that it moves from a horizontal perspective. Just think as a visual, you have all of these programs, interventions, you have workforce, you have welfare, you have health programs. They're all horizontal. Just reverse it. Make it vertical. Mm-hmm. Turn it upside down so that as you're working with people, you're helping people move up. That's where upward mobility comes from. If your education needs to be addressed, let's deal with education. But if you have a health problem, let's deal with that from an upward mobility perspective, a vertical management position versus a horizontal approach to some of these issues that we just started to talk about. And they're numerous, but there are things that we can do in this community, not only from the public side, but look at the philanthropic support that you have.
Right.
But you got to get away from silos. Mm. Silos is what's creating. That's what I mean by horizontal. Everybody, there's a program for everybody.
Yeah.
Just reverse it so that it becomes vertical.
What I see of the youth, 13, 14, 15-year-olds now carrying guns, what is your plan to curtail the crime in Charlotte-Mecklenburg?
I learned this not only growing up in the hood, as they say, but also working with youngsters who were involved with criminal activity, trying to keep them out of jail. I did that working with John Hayes and the Housing Authority with Fairview Homes and some of the projects years and years ago. We found one single determinant that was more valuable than anything else. It's called engagement. Mm-hmm. You have to engage the young folk on a regular basis.
Yes.
And today, because of technology, we're not engaging youngsters as much as we used to. For example, they're glued on their phone, they're glued on the iPad, even going to school every day. Guess what? They're on a Chromebook all day. There's no interaction with human beings for the most part of the day. And then they go home, there's no interactions. We have to use our capacity, particularly in terms of the resources, but the office I'm running for is County Commission. We're responsible for all parks and recreation is a part of our environmental stewardship responsibility. So let's figure out how to engage the community and how to engage the families. And one of the strategies, BJ, would be the creation of something called community resource centers.
Okay, I like
that. What I mean by that is if you have to go for help or assistance, public assistance for anything, have those resource centers strategically located in the neighborhood so you don't have to get on a bus to go somewhere or get somebody to take you. That really creates another barrier to engagement. But if they're resource centers where people get to know you, it's almost like going back to the old neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
Where you're walking down the street, you know, Miss Jones, you know, going to say something to you, and she knows your parents. But if there's a resource center and they're engaged with you and your family or your next door neighbor, that relationship will pay off in terms of engagements for youngsters so that if they're having a problem, because you talked about youth violence. So yeah. If there is a problem, youngsters can reach out, or folk from that resource center would have a relationship with that youngster so that he would not or she would not resort to violence.
This 2040 plan, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of Black people do not know what's included in the 2040 plan. Is that our fault? Did the architects of the 2040 plan do a good job of trying to engage the community to let them know what's in it? Because it's already 2023, so we got that many years before the completion of this plan.
It is a monster plan. The 2040 plan has all the information as it relates to development and how you plan a city. And as we're continuing to grow, it is really a document that we need to get familiar with. And I think the leadership with the city, because the planning comes under the city of Charlotte, really needs to communicate to the public. They have a series of public hearings. But I tell you, I work for a law firm. There ought to be the kind of writing that it's called regular speak kind of writing, mm-hmm. so that people understand, as opposed to the professional jargon necessary for developers.
So when you think about the 2040 plan, though, I think about, you know, gentrification, because this city is going over having a massive gentrification going on right now. Where do you see that going in the Black community?
Yeah, that's going to be really difficult because it has a lot of different legs. One of the legs is a lack of upward mobility. Mm-hmm. So if the people who already are housed here are not taking advantage of the job opportunities, they already have a place, right?
Yes.
Well, if they don't qualify for one of these $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 jobs, the draw for this community, people are starting to come in this community. So in migration of the workforce is causing tension with the housing stock. So all these people moving in to get these good jobs, there's not a lot of places to live. And so you get gentrification when folks started to move in different spots, to live off of Batesford Road, to live in Hidden Valley, to live in Seversville, all the small communities right outside of the center core of the city. We're bringing people in because we need qualified workers that we can't find here in Charlotte because our youngsters aren't getting the kind of education support that they would be able to take those high paying jobs. It's a tension. It's not just the gentrification itself, certainly, which is really difficult because it hurts our seniors, folk who've been living in the same community for years and years that can't afford to pay the taxes. It certainly hurts young families who want to try to buy a starter home. The average sales price in 2021 for a home, BJ, was over $400,000+. The median price was $385,000. So the difference in income for a household, a white household is $92,000. An African-American household is $43,000. Mm. So when you start talking about gentrification, there are a lot of different parts to it.
Yeah.
But it's something that we need to address. We better address it, or we're not going to have a community where if you work in Charlotte, you're not going to be able to live in Charlotte.
What do you think Charlotte is going to look like in the next 10 years, though?
If we don't do something now, it's going to look like San Francisco.
Wow.
You won't even know Charlotte.
Wow.
As a Charlottean growing up here, it's hard for me to envision some of these places right now. Yeah. When you drive down Flint Street over on the other side of Johnson C. Smith and look at $600,000 homes that where a community had homes of less than 25,000 not very many years ago.
Yeah.
The good part about it is that with the political will and with the right experience of understanding how to frame these issues and how to get everybody in the rowboat rowing in the right direction. You know, right now you got everybody in the rowboat, but they're rowing in different directions.
That's why you talk about One Charlotte.
That's what I'm talking about. So if we can get everybody rowing in the same direction, we can have a tremendous positive impact as it relates to upward mobility for a lot of our citizens and residents of Mecklenburg County.
You know, I just think that the right people are not advocating for Black people in Charlotte. And with all this Black leadership from the top to the bottom, I don't know if there's another city in America that has people of color in prominent positions, but yet the Black citizens are suffering. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
That's why I said to you earlier why I'm running for elected office after a number of years. We are absolutely positioned right now to make real change for those folk, for African-Americans, poor people, to get a piece of this pie here in Mecklenburg County because of what you just said. A lot of times folk don't have the experiences to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. I have that successful experience in connecting the dots, and that's why I'm here now, because I think we can actually make a difference. If we don't connect the dots and just create more dots, we're going to get that much further behind. So yeah, we got the mayor, we got the city manager, police chief, fire chief. There's so many things we could do for youngsters. Fire science, criminal justice, STEMs. You got Honeywell. You got Lowe's. You got Fortune 500. You got Bank of America. You got Truist Bank. You got Wells Fargo here in terms of finance. When I worked in New York with McGraw-Hill, people didn't realize that we own Standard & Poor's, which is the premier ratings agency in the world.
Wow.
And we were out looking for people from Standard & Poor's, starting salaries, $250,000 a Whoa. Year. And so the opportunities are here for our young African-American youngsters, but we have to prepare them for those opportunities.
Arthur Griffin, thank you so much for joining us. Running for Mecklenburg County at large, County Commission at large, and he's going to do a great job. He's going to bring balance back to the city of Charlotte as far as leadership, and that's what you've always done. I've admired you for that and your courage, and I think that's what, I'm not going to say we're lacking that across the board, but we need more of it. So I thank you so much for running and continuing your service. And anything else, lastly, you'd like to say to the audience?
Oh. BJ, it's been a great opportunity to talk to you, and I just hope that I can convince the public that I'm the right person. I think I am the right person, and come out and support me in this election, and I will do this. I will pledge 100% of my effort to making sure that education is addressed, 100% of my effort to make sure that affordable housing is addressed. I'll pledge 100% of my efforts to make sure that access to quality health care is there. And I pledge 100% of my efforts to make sure that equitable economic development opportunities are available for individuals and for small businesses. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. That's Arthur Griffin, Mecklenburg County Commissioner at Large candidate. And when should we vote? Tell us.
Early voting starts April the 28th of this year, and the primary date is May the 17th.